One of the things, another quote that I really enjoyed, I talked to a high school art teacher about 2 years ago, and what he was sharing with his students was that we call it state of the art, right? We call it that because it's forward thinking, because it's two steps ahead. And he said, we don't call it state of the sciences, we don't call it state of the math, we call it state of the arts. And I felt like, as an already working professional artist, it still inspired me.
That's a great quote to end with. So if you would like to volunteer, you'd like to learn more, go to TV Creates, that's with an S, tvcreates.org. I wanted to thank you, Razieh, for your time today, for your candor. I really appreciate the education you've provided us and our listeners. I think we have a much better understanding of the arts in our county and the value that they bring. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
I'm ready.
Hey, good morning. Good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are on earth, whatever time it is, you are tuned in again to Culture in Motion, twice monthly show with myself, Mike Crenshaw, my co-host Ryan Danley.
And what's up?
Ryan's out camping in the woods in the mountains, yeah?
Yep, it's a got a little bit out of town for a while. We get some emotional footing out here with all the upheaval in the world, but you know, trying to keep in touch and keep in touch with my people and see what's going on, you know.
And you know, this is on this show, Culture Emotion, for our listeners, and just to remind our guests today, we talk about the intersections between art, culture, music, politics, and activism. And today we have three very special guests from Minneapolis, Minnesota, representing Our Sister's Keeper, representing the story of a young woman by the name of Judea. And we have Leanne and Latoya. How are you guys doing?
Wonderful. Yeah, we're doing pretty good.
Yeah. Good. It's you all are here to talk about something that is so central to a lot of what we're experiencing right now in the country and in the world. We're here to talk about a lot of things that intersect. There's a story of a young woman, a girl, who witnessed the murder of George Floyd and is processing it through writing a story. There's a story of your nonprofit. Is Our Sister's Keeper a nonprofit?
We're not a nonprofit.
Okay.
We're for profit. We're community activists.
Uh-huh.
So right now we are not a for profit or a nonprofit entity.
Okay. Well, your organization.
Yes.
Has been formed, and without me, you know, taking up too much more time, why don't we get into the discussion and have you tell the story? Can we start with how did you two start working together, and what is Our Sister's Keeper?
Oh, wow. I've known Lee for over 10 years, and our connection actually is through basketball. I'm a former basketball coach in St. Paul, Minnesota, which is where her children played basketball. So I had the honor of coaching her children for several years, maybe about 5 or 6 years ago. And she's always been very supportive, very well connected, and our passions align, our mindsets align. And so we've clicked on all cylinders. And so when this opportunity or this mission, this purpose was given to me, I knew that I couldn't tackle it alone. And so I call my ride or die.
Awesome. So did you form Our Sister's Keeper in the wake of the George Floyd murder on May 25th, 2020?
Yeah, I think as this gift, so to speak, that just dropped in our lap to help this family. I think we were just driving down the street one day, and I'm like, man, we really are our sister's keeper. Like, we're our sister's keeper. We've been doing this for a really long time. Not on this magnitude, but we've been helping young females, you know, get through high school, apply for colleges, have self-respect and integrity. So, I mean, we've had a lot of the same mindsets going into helping the family that we are helping right now. And it's like, you know, I think God has a bigger platform for us, and so we decided, well, let's form our sister's keeper, and it was formed out of compassion for helping people and helping them with resources that they might not have access to or are afraid to go get because they don't like the systems that are in place because they feel slighted or their race. There's racism against them or whatever.
Sure.
Yep. Past trauma. And like Lee said, we've been doing this a long time, individually and together, just supporting young ladies in our community, young mothers in our community, you know, looking for resources for them for housing. And we've been very fortunate that our inner circle are they've been around for a long time. So at this point in our lives, they are like mayors and superintendents of schools and admins at colleges, and so we can call on them when we need some help getting a family to that next level. And so we're just thankful that God has put us in that circle, and we're able to kind of be like intercessors for young ladies around the city, and we're hoping at you know to be intercessors for young ladies around the world.
What are the most common requests out there that you're seeing, like on a, you know, where can we all kind of help and put some focus to that you're seeing, you know what I'm saying? Like, what can we do? Like, what could be something that we're all working towards quickly that would be really helpful that you're seeing out there?
I'll speak to the situation that we're working with now is housing. You know, housing is a really big issue here. The homeless population has just completely boomed. It's like that Band-Aid was tore off after the murders of George Floyd. And I mean, we've had housing encampments in parks, like in Powderhorn Park. Mike, you know where Powderhorn is? I mean, they were filled with like tent cities of people. So, I mean, that's a big thing in food. Food, there's not a lot of food out there for people. They can't afford to buy food. Food stamps are scarce. You know, it's hard to get food stamps because, you know, the government's given us extra $600 with Social Security, with unemployment. And so food stamps, they're not going to give you but $100 in food stamps.
And the quality of food too. We don't have fresh food. People in our brown communities don't have access to fresh food. So, you know, in order to go to the market and get fresh food, that might require you to go 20 miles from your home to be able to get those fresh foods. And from my standpoint, I see that there's a huge need for support for mental health services. Especially now with kids, you know, being out of school, quarantined, and then seeing what they're seeing on TV every night, our kids are really struggling right now. Yes.
Yeah, it's a trip because I just talked to a comrade, Lakita Langford, who's out here doing very similar work, attempting to provide wraparound services for poor people, marginalized people, people of color. And we were talking about the houseless crisis and the housing crisis. And it is, you know, Minneapolis and Portland are so parallel in so many ways. In recent days, I've really been wondering about how similar conditions are really nationally as far as what we're seeing in just survival. I wanted to talk too about the specific way that the murder of George Floyd and the young woman Jadea, the girl who witnessed that, is central to you all's story currently. And I had a few questions. One of the questions I had is, like, how have you seen your community change since May 25th?
The family, Jadea is a 9-year-old, who wanted to go to the store all week long. Mm-hmm. You know, finally her cousin decided, okay, I'm gonna take you to the store, you know. And she had $3 in her hand. She's gonna get some candy. She goes in, gets her candy, comes back out, and is struck with what's going on. Her cousin decides to videotape live on Facebook. And, you know, for a 9-year-old to stand there and witness that, because she can't leave, you know, you can't tell her to run back home because there's too many people out there now, you know, so she had no choice but to be there and watch a grown black man die. And it's horrific. It's just horrific.
Yeah. And some of the ways that we've seen our community, our city change after the murder of George Floyd, I can definitely say that we've had some of our consistent black leadership step up. And they have been on the scene. They have been present. They have been providers. And that spans across generations. Was it Minnesota Restorative? What was their name?
Restore Minnesota.
Yeah, Restore Minnesota, a group of young activists, all under 25 years old, immediately following the murder and the riots where things were destroyed in their communities. They got together and they started giving. They had these pop-up food drives, these pop-up food shelves. These were kids. These were like kids that we taught in Sunday school, to kids that are in our basketball programs, mm-hmm. but they were from the community, and so that's what they did. That's what they've seen us do. Yeah. That's what they've seen the people around them do, and that's what they did. And that was really amazing, mm-hmm. to see that. And then we also have some of our tried and true. We have a lady who's a former Minneapolis police officer, not always a like position in our state, in our city, but Lisa Clemens.
Yeah.
Still to this day providing food for the community in North Minneapolis. When there's a murder or a shooting and the police aren't there, she's there, her team is there. They're supporting counsel and support for the people that are on site. Yeah. And then she's reporting it. So then we know really what's going on. She's giving, and we've also been able to have more of a transparent view of what's going on. Those are the good things. Those are a few of the good things. On the flip side of it, because our Minneapolis City Council, and let me not say our, but because of the Minneapolis City Council and their push to defund the police, it's caused a division between the police department and the people that need their protection and their service the most. Mm-hmm. So the call time, you know, people are on call for hours. The response time, if they even show up, has just been ridiculous. And so crime has gone up. So we're having these kids out here. They don't have jobs. They don't have housing. They're hungry. They weren't employed before COVID, so they didn't qualify for the unemployment. So they're carjacking. It's just been out of control.
The shootings have gone up. It's escalated. I mean, weekly, 2-3 people on the news.
We're in the midst of a gang war. A couple of different ones here, and the gun violence has gone up. The murder rate has accelerated. I think one thing that's really important, I'd be remiss if I didn't say this, is that the way that a lot of people are going to spin the narrative is that, oh, you guys wanted to defund the police. Well, this is what you get. And Black Lives Matter, then what about black on black crime? But I think what we have to also be able to look at is the broader context and the economic situation that we're facing before COVID, before George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Rayshard Brooks, before those police murders, right? We were still in an economic crisis and we were still in a racial crisis in this country. And these things have been exacerbated by the fact that people cannot work right now.
Yep.
There is no certainty of when this economy is going to be able to support families. You know,
that Band-Aid has definitely been ripped off. And so, and like you said, in so many areas, we can look at our crime, we can look at our housing, we can look at our schools.
That's right.
It is just, you know, bleeding.
Yeah.
How's Judea doing?
You know, she has her up and down days. Judea is, she's a very strong-willed young lady. She's very brave, and but you know, there are times she wakes up, you know, in the middle of the night, and it's horrifying for her. Mom gives her hugs and kisses. You know, I mean, what do you do right now? And right now, the battle is trying to get help, get mental health services to help process that healing. But when you again have that lack of trust in systems, well, that's playing a big part too of getting that right away. So,
and we're talking about a child who, if it wouldn't have been for her asking to go to the store, we would not be in this situation right now. All of the movement that's happening right now would not have escalated to the point, you know, and as quickly as it is happening now. But on the flip side of that, she wasn't a kid from suburbia America with two parents in the household making $80,000 a year walking to the store. There were already issues that were present prior to this, and same situation, Band-Aid ripped off now.
Yeah.
Has there been any blowback on her directly from this, from trolls and the evils out there in the world? Have they?
Absolutely. I mean, we have worked very, very hard to keep them out of the public eye, out of the media, out of just out of harm's way, really. We've secured locations for them. You know, so that they can feel safe and feel somewhat normal, if there is a normal. Sure. So yeah, there's been death threats, there's been
white supremacist calls.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Somebody reached out that wanted information on the book that Judea is writing, asking really deep specific questions. Come to find out, this dude is a white supremacist. So, like, wanting to get copyrights and buyout rights to this book that he thinks he wrote about. You know, people are crazy. Like, they're just trying to, you know, sneak in and divide the good that we're trying to bring for this family.
And I think at the beginning, you know, there was a lot of question as to why didn't her older cousin, who was 17, do something, you know, and you know, we saw all the Facebook and social media tags of, if, you know, if something's happening to me, don't record it, do something. Well, you have to realize she was a 17-year-old with her 9-year-old cousin with her. And those were two armed police officers. And this is not a narrative that's new to us. And you can hear both of them in the film, you know, saying, stop, get your foot off of his neck. And the one officer, you know, pushes them back. So, you know, how many times have we seen this? Just as we were afraid watching it, they were afraid standing there.
Yeah. And again, if they had not continued filming live, had her cousin not continued it live, we can't reiterate enough, this movement would not be where it is right now. So many things are changing in this world, not just in our country, but in the world, because these two young ladies were brave enough to film something. And this is the first time, I think, in history that we have had a 360-degree view of a cop killing a black man. We've never seen it like this. And at all angles, there's all angles. And thanks to these young ladies, things are moving.
It's so important to acknowledge that. I actually haven't, I've heard people make generalizations about how helpful it's been for people to film things, because otherwise we wouldn't have known about it. But with this specific incident, it's and how it's really changed things globally as far as the support for the movement for Black Lives. That's a key element. I think also it's important to say that, you know, there's been all these conversations, and condolences to all the people who lost valuable, precious resources when the city went up in flames, people who worked all their lives to build businesses. But I also want to acknowledge that the reason that rage was expressed was because of police murder. You know, yes.
Witnessed in front of two young girls. And this is why we're so vigilant about wanting to get their story out, especially Judea. She's 9 years old to witness a murder. She can't even watch a PG-13 movie without an adult, okay?
Yeah.
And we've seen it. We have seen, especially in Minneapolis, we've had a fair share of police brutality come to the national limelight. So we've seen it. We've all seen it across America. I think with everyone being at home during COVID and having that energy and that time to put in to something and wanting that, having that desire to be a part of something, because we had all been so detached for the last 90 days, that also helped fuel the movement because we were all available.
Right. That's true.
The name of the book is A Walk to the Store, correct?
Judea's Walk to the Store.
Judea's Walk to the Store. And then what can our listeners do to support the story is already completed and you guys are just working on a plan to release it and distribute it?
Where we're at right now, as far as the book is concerned, the template is complete. What we need is the project to be completed, funded, so that we can get the production going. It takes about 9 months for the book, for that process to complete. But our goal is to have this done by Christmas. That's what we need help with. I mean, we want the project completely funded. We're about halfway to our goal of $25,000. The other thing is that we want help with funding for the family, essential basic needs, because the family does not have permanent housing right now. I don't know.
So there's a pre-order for the book, right? There's a pre-order link out there for the book that I was looking at earlier.
Yeah, we put that up there. I think we're gonna your knowledge, and we're gonna take that down and direct people to Judea's fundraiser. That is really in support of the book as well as essential needs. Basically, what people can do is go to www.fundraiser, and it's spelled fundraiser.com/support-for-Judea. Or they can go directly to our website. The link for that is on there. I guess we're not going to say no, we're not going to take pre-orders for the book, but that's not our primary goal. Our primary goal right now is to get that project funded, so that we can get out, get these copies out. And we wanna start out with more than 1,000 copies. We wanna come out running, because I think that everybody's gonna want this book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody's gonna want this book. And our goal also is to have it in every elementary school across the country and in the world.
Yeah.
To Culture in Motion listeners, I'll be putting the link up on our Culture in Motion Facebook page later.
And our website is www.oursisterskeepermn.com. They can find that link there as well.
Okay. Yeah, that was what I was going to ask, was if people could find that link on the Our Sisters Keeper website. So thank you for letting our listeners know. I'm sure there are people listening right now that are going to want to get directly to, whatever they can do to support or get the book when the book is ready to come out. You said Judea is there with you.
Yeah, she's signaling to me when is it my turn?
I'm sorry, I didn't realize.
We're all talking about her.
Yeah, she's sitting back here. Come on, honey.
So, hey, Judea, it's good to meet you.
Hey, Judea, how you doing?
I'm Mike.
Hey.
I'm Ryan.
Hi, Ryan.
What do you hope to accomplish by telling your story to the world, Judea?
Being brave and strong.
Mm-hmm.
She wants the world to, when they see something bad, that they can to be brave and strong like she was.
Right. Have you found that you've changed a lot? Have things changed a lot for you since?
Yeah.
Yeah? Can you say something about that? Maybe I have a 10-year-old daughter. To other young women, to other boys that might be close to your age, what would you say to them?
I don't really know yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I get it.
It's a big deal. You know, like we said, Judea struggles with night terrors from it. And the fact that she's even being brave enough to even tell her story through pictures and words, it's a really big deal. And I think her primary focus is to be brave and strong, right, Judea?
Well, from our position, Judea, we're really, really excited and really amazed at how brave you're being. And thank you so much for continuing in this journey and putting this information out there. And hopefully it can help so many people.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sorry that you had to witness something so terrible, but I'm grateful that you're using your skills to let other people be aware. That's a powerful thing, so thank you.
Thank you.
We're actually running out of time, but is there anything that you all want to say in closing?
So I just want to give you all like a brief snapshot. Come on, baby, go on up. Of what the book cover looks like.
Thank you, Judea.
Thanks, Judea.
And we're really excited and proud about it. And so this is the cover. There's some edits that need to be made still, but this is the general.
So we'll have to get can you email me like a JPEG of that?
Yep.
And then we can post that as a thumbnail when we post this episode to Spotify as well as KBOO.FM.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate, from where we are in Portland for the work y'all are putting in. It's so crucial that people are getting out there and doing stuff. So, from where I'm sitting, it's pretty amazing. So, thank you.
Well, our prayers are with you all out in Portland as well. And we appreciate the fight that keeps going on in George's memory. I mean, like, hey, you're right, Michael. We are very parallel in the things that we are fighting for. So thank you for having us. And you all are a blessing for getting this word out about Judea and her cause and whatnot. So.
Thank you both, Latoya. Thank you, Leanne. Thank you, Judea. And let's follow up in the not so distant future and kind of check in on where things are. All right.
Yes,
sounds
sir.
Good. Thank
all
you.
Right.
All right. Okay. In the culture of motion. Have a good day, everybody. Peace.
Pacifica Radio in San Francisco. This is Flashpoints.